Do you know what your partner's up to when you're away and they're all alone?
No, what?
They're listening to the Screw podcast, of course.
What's that?
Sit back, relax, and listen. And you're an orgasm addict. You're an orgasm addict. Sneaking in the back door with daddy magazines. So your mother wants to know what all the stains on the jeans. And you're an orgasm addict.
It's never good, but always bad. Hi, you're listening to the Screw podcast with Felicia Rose and A-Love. Hi, A-Love. It's all right. How are you? That's good.
Yeah, look, you know me. I'm never really bad because, like, I'm a goofball who, you know, likes to play with my wang wang, you know? So it's, No, just what I'm saying. Like, look,
fair enough.
My joys. Let's be real. Like, I'm not somebody that, like, tries to do a lot of, like, slacking on feeling good. You know, practice makes perfect. And
I like that. That's a good mantra to have. Mantra. I said that funny. Mantra. It's a good monstrosity to have. Yeah.
You know, I feel like things, like, change so much, and, like, I'm totally, like, love change. I've always been a change junkie. There's no doubt about it. But, like, you know, I like to, like, have a good time, and I like to, like, think about what I'm going to do to make life better for myself and my fam. So, you know, that's kind of been, like, I've been doing a lot of that. A lot of, like, strategizing, if you will, you know? Yeah.
That's good. Strategizing is good. I find that for, you know, people that aren't necessarily following a specific schedule that, for example, like a 9-to-5, I find that it's really good to strategize in general, whether it's daily or weekly or just goal-wise, because otherwise there's really not any structure to keep you in check. And so therefore, you sort of have to keep yourself in check. And I think that those are good ways to do that.
The reality is like, we are moving to a lot of these weird, like, gig economy kind of cultures and employment situations. And, you know, like, I find, like, the most, like, in job interviews, like, you know, they're asking you, like, how do you handle remote work? Like, are you comfortable with, you know, and, like, after a while, it's like, well, is there any other work, you know? But I forget, like, I spent decades in shift work, you know? So, like, I definitely appreciate having to go around a schedule. I can't remember at, like, what point. I think I must have been at Worcester State. Shout out to Worcester State. What's up? I think I, like, at some point, whatever, you know.
Where was that little? That was adorable.
I remember getting very disinterested. I mean, I was already in my 30s, but, like, getting very disinterested in, like, this shift work. I think I was doing 3 12-hour hours at the pharmacy and trying to finish up school. And, like,
yeah,
I remember feeling, like, you know, and, like, you're trying to play all the, like, games, right? Like, most jobs, it's either, like, you need to work at least 32 or 34 hours to be considered a full-time employee, right? And, like, so you're, like, trying to, like, figure out how to do that just do enough to keep, like, any benefits you have.
Right, or, yeah.
You know, and it's you know, I don't miss those days, but, like, working for yourself or, like, working remotely or any of these things, like, you know, takes a kind of discipline, at least in, you know, waking up and thinking about what you're going to do today or, like, having it planned out. And, like, you know, at one level you think, oh, I'm free from having to, like, have a schedule, but on some level, in order to, like, keep being your own boss and doing your own thing, like, you do have to have a schedule. You have to have, like,
yeah, I think that people that are like, oh, you get to choose your own schedule, don't realize that you kind of, that's not always true. You know, sure, some people have a very flexible schedule, But for the most part, I feel that the average, you know, I feel like the, if we were to poll a bunch of people, more often than not, we're just sort of used to getting up and getting ready and starting our day at 9 and ending it at 5 or 6 or so. And that's just sort of like ingrained in us. So even though people, you get to choose your own schedule, it's like, not really. Our bodies kind of are already used to that old schedule. So, well, in a lot of people. But either way, it like, it's hard to self-motivate. Getting up and self-motivating is really tough. So.
And then like, there is a lot of isolation to it. And like, you know, I think people are social.
True.
I think collaborating and like talking about what you're doing does help you like kind of tease out even better ideas. I think anybody who is like working in the consulting world like values at least one other person that like knows what they're doing and like, you know, like not like
right
any secrets or anything, but just like the motivation of like idea formation and like being able to like bounce, you know, off a plan or a strategy with somebody else. Like,
yeah, talking that shit out loud is very helpful a lot of the time. So
I think like I have been thinking a lot about, you know, I mean, we've seen the headlines, you know, what's weird about a place like Albuquerque is that it doesn't get super cold for super long, but when it does get super cold, you see like, you know, an exacerbation of like the like poverty and like stuff that's already going on here. Like, you know, there'll be like more congregating of like the homeless in like a warm spot than you usually see, you know, which like makes like, you know, kind of like, and there's like all sorts of forecasts, like, and you know, bless how sweet this area is on some level, like there's constantly like, you know, things about helping the homeless rather than harming them, which is, you know, not, it is, you know,
a nice change of pace,
high group, like open for, you know, abuse and stuff. And like, actually, when we got here, we were kind of like looking at the relationship between the university, because it's such a big thing here, and the homeless. And like, because there is a lot of homeless people, because it's a public university, they do come on campus a lot and spend a lot of time there. And, you know, I guess traditionally, some of these college campuses are considered like more like liberal, and the students are more concerned for like homeless people than the community at large and stuff like that. So anyways, I'm saying all this because it keeps grounding me in like, you know, anytime we talk about anything being wrong with the population or community at large, I think, oh, it's like X amount of times worse for the queer community or, you know, communities of color, you know, like we are like facing kind of times of like, you know, where more wealth continues going uphill, like, and like, you know, you see all this stuff with the second wave of COVID, you know, the second major wave of COVID, and like people are kind of not wanting to talk about it, even though there have been many people in healthcare that have been like, just so you know this is coming, and not talking about it isn't gonna make it like disappear. Like,
right,
still a thing, and it's going to happen. And like, you're already seeing in other countries like incidences going up, incident rates. So like, you know, all this stuff, again, it's like, I think health. And I think, you know, I lost like a dear friend, you know, during this COVID thing, and from Queens. And I, you know, I've thought about like what that kind of meant to already be older and isolated and like, you know, struggle with like substance use, and then to find like yourself, like not make it out of that. And like, you know, we're just now looking at the data from the last like major, you know, COVID outbreak, and like seeing how horribly it affected especially underserved communities. So I think it's always important to like being talking about it, but like I think you see with like any news cycle, things like fall out of favor of talking about after a while, even if they're still happening, you know?
Right.
And that is up to the responsibility of anybody who has like platforms to like keep talking about them and like saying, all right, well, what is the strategy here? Like, how do we find ourselves having a more supportive community? Should everybody be closed indoors again? Or should some other like major thing happen? Like, how do we make sure, you know, we don't lose another brother or sister, you know, in these rough times. So anyway,
right.
Those are kind of things on my mind. And, you know, because I'm in like a public health program and I'm really trying to apply this to the community as much as possible, like it's something that like I've been thinking about, you know, especially when you see. So, you know, I hate HRC for the most part, historically. Like, and it's not that I hate HRC. It's that anything that has a lot of funding, one can have a hard time understanding how just a few people can take a lot of money that is earned kind of on the behalf of the community's name, so to speak, and like how they utilize that. And HRC has all of these, mm-hmm. and they've kind of been able to insert themselves. And they're mostly like an organization that works on like legislative action. Like, let me just represent them like, you know, accurately. And they're a huge organization and they're there to kind of like, you know, move on things and lobby on things that, you know, they think bring benefit or protection to the queer community. So I think that's like my best, like my best, nicest version. And they've mm-hmm. struggled in the last few years, you know, finding the right kind of leader for the organization. They had a huge like corporate like leadership period, meaning the people that were running it came from corporate America. And, you know, a lot of these rating development systems right. happened of rating corporations. And like there was critique because some of these corporations, how could they rate so high if they're putting money in Republican donors' hands and Democratic donors' hands, like a company like AT&T or something like that, right? You know, and like, you know, kind of
sure.
like mm-hmm. what these ratings mean. So they also have ratings for, whatchamacallit, like locations, right? So like New Mexico got like 100% rating from HRC, you know. Well, right. So like I'm trying to understand, you know, what that is.
It's never good, but always bad. Hi, you're listening to the Screw Podcast with Felicia Rose and A-Love. Hi, A-Love. It's all right. How are you?
Because, you know, it's like,
that's good.
Things like this all the time, like for the corporations. And you're like, well, what does this mean? Like, you support. Okay, so let's see. It says Albuquerque received a score of 100 on the LGBTQ plus inclusivity in laws, policy, and services.
Fair enough.
Human rights campaign. Okay. Oh, and
I like that. That's a good mantra to have. Mantra. I said that funny. Mantra. It's a good monstrosity to have. Yeah.
The government body and like the institutions under that like are supportive, right? I like what it does say, however, the rating does not entirely reflect the experiences of queer people in Albuquerque. Okay. So yeah. So it's like it's saying it evaluates any non-discrimination, city employees, city services, law enforcement, and leadership on LGBTQ plus equality. It equally accounts for inclusivity related to sexual orientation and gender identity. So there you go.
That's good. Strategizing is good. I find that for, you know, people that aren't necessarily following a specific schedule that, for example, like a 9-to-5, I find that it's really good to strategize in general, whether it's daily or weekly or just goal-wise, because otherwise there's really not any structure to keep you in check. And so therefore, you sort of have to keep yourself in check. And I think that those are good ways to do that.
There are a lot of military and military families in Colorado. And there is in New Mexico as well. But like, it's, you know, it's already like a different population size, right? So like the more population, the more chance you have to have assholes like as part of the population. So, and I guess when I think about this, like, you know, we see all these things and that's great.
Right,
I'm glad
yeah.
the state supports queer folks. I'm glad at least the state itself is getting a good rating. But like, you know, I'm sure New York gets a good rating for these things as well, right? And my question is like, that may be the case, but how are you looking at and rating?
Where was that little? That was adorable.
I was like researching and trying to do a lot of research on this because, like, again, I think we've like very much stuck to this, like, kind of our concerns for queer health kind of like stand around like HIV, suicide, depression, right? And I think, you know, depression is probably like something good to look at and extrapolate like out and figure out like and talk about it more. You know, I don't know what happened. Somewhere we got to this idea of like, you know, if coming out is such part of the process and everybody's doing it, then like that's all it requires to be like happy and healthy and secure as a queer person in the world. Yeah.
Right. It yeah.
Nonsense. And it lacks like some fundamental honesties about like, yes, employment, you know, and even like, I would say, you know, the other accesses of like prejudice and discrimination that queer people face based on like other identity affiliations, you know, whether you're like younger or older, you know, like, you know, elder LGBT people have like often a hard time finding services and stuff that like support, you know, support them, period.
You know, so maybe, yeah, I think that people that are like, oh, you get to choose your own schedule, don't realize that you kind of, that's not always true. You know, sure, some people have a very flexible schedule, but for the most part, I feel that the average, you know, I feel like the, if we were to poll a bunch of people, more often than not, we're just sort of used to getting up and getting ready and starting our day at 9 and ending it at 5 or 6 or so. And that's just sort of like ingrained in us. So even though people, you get to choose your own schedule, it's like, not really. Our bodies kind of are already used to that old schedule. So, well, in a lot of people. But either way, it like, it's hard to self-motivate. Getting up and self-motivating is really tough. So
around these things aren't like part of like higher alcohol.
True.
And substance, other substance use, like you, like we're not connecting the dots of what it means to feel healthy and happy, right? You know, I mean, of course, like if you're looking for this data, it's there and it is stark and it makes you feel like we have like put all of our eggs in one basket,
right?
Baskets thinking if those things work, if like, for instance, marriage equality, check. You know, we have like, we have a few institutional like confirmations, but like.
Yeah, talking that shit out loud is very helpful a lot of the time. So
positive identity formation, like look at the places where it's under threat. Look at like, you know. Wait, sorry.
Oh, good point. A nice change of pace.
Well, you know, amazingly so, when I started looking at depression data, the biggest at-risk group was like bisexual men, most specifically. Yeah, health and wellness, you know. So like, you know, you're looking at these things and like you're saying, okay, you know, because we know bi erasure is real and that like it creates, you know, like, so we've played this game of like identity affirmation through like the coming out process, right? And whatever. And like, we have very like, here's the thing. I was thinking over and over again, we are still so much like in the state of mind where we're looking for like affirmation and approval from like the heteronormative world to exist. Like we're like need like a kind of fiercer agenda of like, this is what our community looks like. This is our history.
Yeah.
This is our narrative. This is our sex. This is our sexuality. These are our health concerns. Something that is very like much more grounded in like, this is this and this is who we are. For the simple reason for people to find it and gravitate towards it when they need to, you know? And like that does have to be a public health campaign of sorts of like, you know, you are never going to stop feeling otherized until like society stops otherizing you. Like we have to stop treating like these things as like exceptions to the norm and say, this is the variety of life that exists. And as you come into your life and come into your own, you may feel any number of these things. And here's the information you need as you like understand who you are, whether that's trans, whether that's bisexual, whether that's heterosexual, right? You just like have it all like kind of still on that Kinsey-esque spectrum of like queer and genderqueer and say, these are the things and the information you need if you're feeling this way. Like there's just no access to this information in any kind of easy and plausible way. I mean, like, think of the things you find on the internet if you start just like searching for gay sex. Most likely you're going to get porn first. And should that really be your first introduction to like gay sexual health? Sure. Right. And then like I'm only making that critique.
Right.
Look, I love pleasure. We love talking about sex, but like I only feel like porn can be ingested healthily with the understanding of what like actual sex is versus pornographic sex. You know, like unfortunately on some level you have to think of porn as like a sex toy and not like your sexuality. You're not going to have that sexuality with somebody in real life. Yeah, not to call the people objects, but like it's a something that's meant to assist stimulation, no? Like, yeah, so like, I'm not saying like the people who act and perform porn are like dildos. I just mean like the form that the, well, yeah, you know, all right, cool. Yeah, well said, well said. Yeah, exactly. Holes and souls.
Right.
So, that's great. I mean, and, you know, like I say this for like the simple reason of, you know, I do always want people to enjoy sex, but like we have to recognize like complicated ways of which sex interacts with like your societal responsibilities, your like personal experience, the things you've been through, you know? And like, I don't see anywhere where like we offer
that
kind of like space of understanding with like sex in general, but especially with like queer sex. Like, what do we understand about it if nothing but like stereotypes or like kind of like piecing it together through word of mouth? Like, we know how unreliable.
What's the title of this rating? Like queerest friendly city or queerest friendly, queer friendliest.
They like fall in love as soon as they like have sex, and that then after 6 months they never have sex again and like stay in love forever. Like imagine like that's your stereotype of like it, and like trying to like develop as organically as possible your own identity and sex and sexuality around that, right? Like, how do you understand yourself?
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's not just like this is the queerest city or the friendliest city to queers. It's like, okay, here's policy law, and which I guess, you know, I guess could be argued is sort of similar, but that's.
Oh, they're getting better. They're getting better.
Right.
Or it's not real, right? Like what an example that I always hear from the queer boys is like, you know, when do you see in like film or whatever when two men are about to like have sex, like butt.
Interesting. I would have thought it would be like Colorado or
where anybody stops and say, you know, do you need a minute before we get started? Like, it's all like everybody is magically washed and ready to go at all times, or that this is never like a part of real conversation about sex. And if we never like represent it and we have no means of talking to people about it, like how is it ever learned? I think that first episode of Queer as Folk, they're at the bar, getting high, doing drugs, dancing for like 4 or 5 hours. And then immediately they go home. He takes like boy's pants on and starts eating his ass. No fucking way, dude. No fucking way. Like, that's not real. You know? And like, it's fine that it's not real if we have like introduced some sort of other information that like is community knowledge, and that's it. Where's the community knowledge? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just my tie back to my complaint about HRC. Okay, cool. Do your things and do your ratings, but like, how does this become applicable, like, to like the everyday health? Like, you know, how are we working on a plan, you know, outside legislation? And I say this, like, I get you do what you do and you're concerned with like laws and policy, but like, how do we get concerned about like the social contract? And shouldn't these things go hand in hand? Mm-hmm. Like, laws and policy also like do include and are like central to our health, whether it's physical safety, whatever, all those terms of health. So shouldn't we have like a big component of this that is like also lobbying for comprehensive queer sex, you know, like educate, like, or something that like starts addressing the issue? I mean, I would have argued,
right, which is such nonsense.
In the 80s and 90s, once HIV, like you're going to need to start talking about butt fucking at some point in your curriculum. At some point, like, don't let hip hop teach everybody about butt sex for straight people. And like, you know what I mean? Like, don't let the teachers be these like random like things, mm-hmm. that are like make people like, Exactly.
Right. Right. Mm. Uh-huh.
No, I mean, it's true. Like, and I don't know, like, you know, and I always say this because I'm not like, don't want to be one of those dumbasses that is like, oh, I've exhausted all resources and I don't see a comprehensive, you know, thing for this. And like, I know, like,
it's true,
you know, I've always been interested in the concept of like a queer wiki of some sort that, like, you know, it's a mount that relationship information has the power. Like, the less we know, the less we can figure these things out and navigate, and the more likely we are to like fail or be like, you know, kind of dominated by some other force or power, right? Whether it's your employer. You know what,
well, and look at like the generations that are interested in the things that we do have that are technically safeguards or whatever. Marriage equality, I'm sorry, but I don't, it, like, the 30 and under generation right now is not interested in fucking marriage, and they don't give a shit. Like, and I'm not saying like it should be taken away or that it's not valued by the people that are able to marry or that have married or that need to marry or that whatever the fuck, you know, I'm not taking away from that. It is an important thing to have, but like, it's also indicative of like when and where the different people that were running things had to like appease and please which flavor queer people. And it was like the rich, affluent queers that they were like, let's hear, we'll give you this one because we know you guys want to get married. You know, it's weird.
It really does about like, you know, and it's not just positive identity formation as like a queer person, and it really is like positive identity formation as a person. And because we have all of these like externalities that make,
where did this come out of randomly? Oh, just health and wellness in general. Yeah,
or big or small, or, you know, blue-eyed, or, you know, black or brown, you know, all of, mm-hmm. these factor into like what gets pushed back on us and our own identity formation, you know, like, you can't help for that stuff to not sink in on some level and like affect the way you see yourself, you know. And I think that is the great like deprogramming of like, you know, the constructs of society, like, you know. And you, I still attribute this to you saying like, I don't want to be like rated on how good I was for a girl to have done that. I just want to be like on like the own accords of Felicia having done that, and like, and not to matter if it was like a girl or boy or whoever who did it. And I was like, mm-hmm. that is really to me like the ultimate like conversation. Like, I don't like, nobody does, like, we all want to be like equally human in this fight, even mm-hmm. though that's like nearly impossible. And, you know, so I just like, I want to be mindful of it because like, I do like telling people how to have good sex. And like, and part of that is like, I can't tell them specifically what to do, but like the things to kind of work on inside their mind to like get to a point where they're having sex they feel good about. And I think that's even more important. You can't control always the other person in the room, but you can control to the point and say, I feel good about the sex I had because all of these like kind of ideas and needs and comforts that I wanted were met, you know? And I do think that that is a big portion to like having like at least enjoyable sex, you know? And if you want to be having that like peel the paint off the wall sex, well, that's like about finding like that chemistry that like helps peel paint with you, you know? And like, fuck yeah. That's the fun part too, you know? They want to come to like this podcast with more of
that. No, I mean, no one's first introduction to that stuff should be that, honestly, in my opinion.
Like, think about healthy and happy sex like more. It was like reading that. Just in terms of like the balance of not just like multiple partners, but like the idea that your friends and like your family and like your intimate partners, they're all kind of part of the spectrum of how you divide yourself and spend your time and give up
your emotion
and your energy, you know? And it's not like that it's all like sexual, but that these are all relationships that have different levels of dynamic and different levels of intimacy that you give to them. You know,
that's a good way of putting it. It is a like supplemental part.
Like being like deliberate, like, you know, the last time we talked about like this kind of like vampirism and, and like friendship sometimes. And like, it does take a minute to like kind of like.
No one thought you were saying that. You don't have to explain yourself. It's a piece of the puzzle. If you want to include it, it shouldn't be the puzzle.
With our family, because we know
it's not the whole picture. It's just a slice of it. You could use, you know, all sorts of things to assist you. What your arsenal consists of is your business. But again, all of those little pieces make up a whole picture instead of just one being the sole picture. Holes and holes.
Okay. Oh, I think, honestly, I did. My mom told me, this came out like, okay, yeah, cool. Now, yeah, like, that's awesome. So I've been like checking out, and I've dabbled with this before. Like, you know, there's all sorts of like really fabulous and interesting pornography in this world. But there's this Brazilian guy, I think he's Brazilian, or he's actually from Portugal. Well, he speaks Portuguese.
Right.
And he is, I don't know, like, I don't think you could call him a pornographer, and I don't want to reduce it to like hipster porn, because I actually think it's like much better than that. In that, like, you know, it's all about, like, there's some sexuality to it. It'll get you hot. I think it's through tomorrow the morning. It's like, maybe the guys are fucking cute and maybe they have, like, mediocre sex, but, like, I don't know. Okay. So, yeah. So his name is Antonio da Silva. And he...
Well, when all you have is, like, porn and stereotypes and, like, media that plays into those stereotypes, not to say that there aren't more TV shows and more representation out there, however, some of that isn't accessible to everybody, right? Not everybody has a Netflix account, not every teenager has a Amazon Prime. So again, you're still having younger generations taught by word of mouth, gossip, you know, and a lot of it is incorrect, or it's misrepresentation, or it's stereotypes, or it's fabricated, right?
Thick and like explicit at the same time. So like even the scenes that you're like, oh my gosh, that's kind of hot. Like they feel very organic. It feels like the performers really wanted to fuck each other like really badly. So they do pull that off well. So yeah, I'm trying to like, you know, I've never been like really good at like porn. Like it's never been like... It's never like, I don't know. Like, it's never, I've always wanted to like, you know, explore it. So we watched the gay video, the ABNs or whatever the fuck they're called, the gay porn video.
Right. So people are just, they're like, well, it's normal to just show up and have any preparation done because, hey, in that clip I saw, they didn't shower first after their 12-hour bike ride or, you know, whatever.
You know, like, what is it? Chi-Chi LaRue still, like, is, like, hosting, like, a co-host or, like, shows up every year, waddles herself out on stage. And, like, she was, like, a huge critiquer of, like...
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean... Like, I'll find you a clip and send it later. Like, she's a little yeah. aged, and like her drag is like starting to feel a little dated of sorts. So, I mean, she like a grand dame of like the stuff, which like all respects paid, go Chi-Chi LaRue. But you know, also like has been problematic over the years here and there as well. So, in my effort to like kind of like stay true to the things that I still know that I want to like be a part of my life and like. That I do think, you know, it's one of the first kind of like X's I felt like they complicates queer people's lives is this whole idea that like queers are different and that's not the norm. Like the first time you have like queer sexual thoughts in your head, whatever they are and whoever they're for, you like are equipped with like feeling maybe like you're not like everybody else. And like, because that otherism is sitting in the ether. And I do think that immediately stunts some of our ability to enjoy the pleasure, like the pleasures that we want to enjoy, you know? And I think like, I think there's a way to like fix that, you know, to some degree. And it is like, again, that deprogramming, like whatever, you know, whatever it is, I think, you know, we need to like have like a multi-layer
that are just like rhymes in a song or a punchline in a comedy. You know, I remember like, I can't remember which comedy it was, but there was a comedy that basically introduced like pegging into just it was probably like Freddy Got Finger. It was some comedy back in like the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was the first time that like pegging was truly like looked at, like one of the characters was into it in a positive way, at least from what I've, you know, at least from the mainstream movies I had seen. And like, I swear, it's just like, until it's introduced in some kind of mainstream media, it's like, it's not even discussed. So why not, like you said, introduce realistic expectations into mainstream media instead of it being like these little dollops of things over time.
Whatever that looks like non-missionary, like cis man on cis woman fucking, you know, everything outside that variety. How do we like say, look at all the things that are occurring outside that variety. Therefore, look at how normal it must be. If it's that varied and that consistently varied and like internationally varied, human population varied, then it's fucking normal. Yeah. So like a small, so a portion of y'all were selected to incubate. Good for you.
I think you should delete the part where you make that suggestion, because that's a really good idea. Delete that out of there. Okay.
You know,
because somebody's going to steal that shit.
I don't know how it is. Is in, maybe you can say like this, a lot of like queer male sex feels competitive and feels conflict laden. Like people are either trying to outdo themselves with like passing as like masculine, or there's some sort of like stuck in like roles. I know, but like, how do we like, you know, and right, because the same shit's happening with like
improve the fuckbowl, man. You know, You should want that for people, even if you aren't in the fuck pool. Like, you should absolutely want that for everybody.
We've really blurred the lines between, like, BDSM kind of, like sex play definitions with, like, things that are, like, more emotionally centered, you know? And it's, like, you know, I look at Danny Boy culture and say, like, look at, like, and I don't mean, like, underage, obviously. I mean, like, you know, the dynamic of older queer men with younger queer men. And, like, it almost feels like this has been, like, a uptrend lately. I don't know if you see the amount of twinks with, like, daddy thirst online. But, like, I have to say, like, I look at that and say, this is very different than the years of which anybody under 25 was saying, if you're over 35, you're dead to me, you know? So why would this trend maybe happen? I don't know. Maybe capitalism is making it really fucking hard for people to survive. And, like, maybe these relationships are coming through. Maybe, like, somebody's looking to fill the gap of, like, some level of mentorship that is not there, that does not exist, you know? You see, like, the kind of, like, things about insecurity and confidence within peer groups.
Right.
Like, it's just still a fucking mess is my point. So, like, I really would love to see, you know, how one approaches it, like, you know, to make some of those things better. Hence, like, what I'm trying to learn about.
Right.
You know? I love you too. Duh. Fuck yeah. We love you. Fuck yeah.